This morning I wish to start off by saying that no, I did not write the message that you will be hearing this morning. Ed's granddad wrote a number of different messages, and I suppose in total we have 15 or 20 of them. And if you can see this print, that's what it was print on, and it takes quite a bit of deciphering to get all that together. But this sermon, I would presume, was given somewhere in the 1930s. Edda was privileged to hear some of these at some point, and so, as I say, I wish to share that with you, and I'm sure Grandpa Adset would be very pleased to know that the message is being shared with a number of other people again at this time. Jesus was often teaching to his disciples. They could hardly grasp about the duties of his followers. He began to teach them he would have to suffer. Peter's love for his master made him rebel at the thought of such fate for him. Because of his love, he sought to hold his master back from throwing away his life. But in doing this, he was acting the part of Satan in seeking to tempt Jesus from his great work of sacrifice. This way of the cross was not an accident. It was the way marked out for Christ. To swerve from it would be fail in his mission. Our best friends may become our tempters in the same way in their love for us, and they seek to keep us from entering the path of duty which will lead to sacrifice. Mothers may seek to restrain their children from going to foreign fields. Any of us, in the warm affection of our hearts, may seek to dissuade them from perilous or costly service, which may be their duty to undertake. We need to guard ourselves at this point. The path of true success does not always lie along sunny hillsides. Sometimes it goes down into the dark valley of self-sacrifice. And if we try to hinder any from entering upon hard duties, urging them to choose easier ways, we may be doing Satan's work. We may be plucking the crown from the brow of our friend by holding back his feet from the way of the cross. In the matters of duty, we must know only one guide and follow the call only one voice. We are not sent in this world to have a good time, and not sent here to consult our own inclinations at all. We are here to go where Christ leads, to follow him, to sacrifice as he leads us in this path. We dare not allow ourselves to turn aside any tenderness of human love. It is the way of duty, however, that leads us home. From the scriptures, then Jesus said to his disciples, "If anyone wants to come with me, he must forget himself and carry his cross and follow me." There are a few things at which people do more wretched than in their efforts of self-denial. Very few seem to have the remotest concept of what it does. One does without meat on Fridays, eats fish instead, and thinks he has denied himself in a most commendable way. Another gives up social disputation for 40 days in Lent and is complacent over the merit of great self-denial. Others make themselves miserable in various ways, inflicting pain, making useless and uncalled sacrifices, as if God was pleased when they suffer. But these things do not constitute self-denial, like other traits of Christian likeness is unconscious of itself. We deny ourselves when we follow Christ with joy and gladness through the cost of danger and suffering, just where He leads. The cross is not to be taken up The cross is not to be taken up simply borne when laid upon the shoulder. This willingness in cheerful suffering for Christ. Some people endure trials, but always with repining. The spirit of these words require cheerfulness in suffering for Christ. Half the trials are gone if we meet it in a glad spirit. Notice again, it is the cross and not some other means that each one is to take up. It is a particular cross that God lays at our feet where we are to bear. We are never to make crosses for our own self, but always to accept those which are allotted to us. Each one is the best for Him. Sometimes we think a lot particularly hard and we compare it with others, the lot of this or other person, and wish we had the cross instead of our own. But we do not know what other people's crosses are. If we did, we might not want to exchange. The cross that seems woven with flowers, and if we put it on our shoulders, we might find it filled with sharp thorns under the flowers. The cross of gold seems so bright and should find so heavy that it would crush us. The easiest cross for each one to bear is his own. There is a way to get the crosses out of our life altogether, as a father explained to his child. Taking two pieces of wood, one long and the other shorter. Let the longer represent God's will and the shorter one, your will. If I lay the two pieces side by side and parallel to each other, there is no cross. It is only when I lay the shorter piece across the longer one that I make a cross in my life when my will fails all doubt of God. When I cannot say, "Thy will be done." If my will sweetly giving a quiet assent, in His cross, in there is no cross. The way to take out the cross, therefore, and always glad accept the love of Him, whatever trial, pain, or loss God sends. For whoever wants to save his own life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. It seems to be saving one's life to be governed by self-interest and to avoid self-denial sacrifice. To live together about me as much as possible of the things that give comfort, pleasure, or power. But this is to be the motive the life is always thrown away. That is a deep meaning of our Lord's words. Self-seeking is self-losing. We have not really learned how to live at all until we have learned to live for Christ. What we keep for ourselves, we lose it. It is only what we give away that we really keep. Selfishness is not only sin, it's also a spiritual death. The way to save one's life, says the Master, is to lose it. Christ himself lost his life, poured it out in self-sacrifice for the good of others. It seems a waste, but as a waste, he found it again in great glory. Anything suffering any loss or pain or making any sacrifice merely for our own sake. True self-denial is renouncing a self and yielding of the whole life to the will of Christ. It is self coming down from life's throne, laying crown and scepter at the Master's feet, and henceforth submitting the whole way to His way. It is living all the while, not to please ourselves, nor to advance our own personal interests, but to please our Lord and do His work. It is denying ourselves anything that is sinful in His sight. It is glad making of any sacrifice that only to Him requires us giving up a pleasure or comfort for the good of others while living out His Spirit may demand. The essential thing is that self gives way altogether to Christ as the motive of life. Paul lost his life for Christ, renouncing everything for his sake, suffered everything, and gave his life at the last. But did he learn anything by self-sacrifice? A young girl, beautiful, cultured, honored, with lovely home and many friends, turned away from ease, refinement, and luxury, and went to teach the free slaves. She lived among them, gave up her rich young life to help them and save them. One day she was sickened and died, and her friends said, "Oh, what a waste of precious life." But was it a waste? All who follow Christ truly make the choice between saving and losing life, and that is make between making self-interest and Christ the motive in living. In following Christ, we never be called actually to make great sacrifices, but that we are ready to make them even to the utmost implied in our covenant of discipleship. Yet, this losing is saving. It is sowing the golden wheat in the ground. Losing it for the time, but to reap for a rich harvest in by and by. Will a person gain anything if he wins the whole world but loses his life? Of course not. There is nothing he can give to regain his life. But what as a man profiteth if he gains the whole world and loses his own soul? That is putting the case in most favorable light. The whole world is largest possible gain. But suppose a man got it. It can't keep him from trouble. It cannot give him peace, a conscience, It cannot comfort in sorrow. It can't make a soft pillow for him when he's dying. It can't purchase heaven when he is gone. All he can do with the world after is to keep it till he dies. He cannot carry any of it with him to the other life. How much did he leave? Asked one, referring to a millionaire who had just died. Every cent, was the reply. He left it all. So it is easy to see that there is no profit, but rather a fearful and external loss in gaining the whole world and the price of his soul. Then, think how much smaller price than the whole world. Many people will sell their soul. Some do it for a few hours of guilty pleasure. Some for political office. Some for money. Some for honor. And what Judas did in his day. In a newspaper, this advertisement appeared. Wanted: a nice cottage and grounds in exchange for a lot of choice liquors. No doubt many people answered that advertisement. Men are continually giving home and property for the love of small drinks. They are selling their souls in many other ways is pitiful trifles. They are bartering their heavenly birth for the message of poverty. What shall a man give in exchange for his soul? That's the trouble. When the soul is lost, there is no recovering. When we make our choices, we live our life, whether right or wrong. There's no possibility of changing the results. Life is given to us only once, and we live it wrongly. There is no chance to live over again. A soul can't be gotten back. No money will redeem it. I think those words are quite applicable to our time and age in this particular time.